Let's pick up our story today in Joshua chapter number 11. Verse 23 is where we want to start. It is a summary verse for everything that has just come before it, the things that we'd been talking about. And that is how Joshua has now defeated the northern alliance of the Canaanites, just like he defeated the southern alliance of the Canaanites before. So he has control of every place, having dealt with the fortified cities. He has control of all the areas from the north up by the foot of Mount Hermon, clear down to the south by Kadesh Barnea. All of that has now lost their military ability to resist the Israelis. This probably took place between 1416 BC, when the Israelis first entered to the Promised Land, and 1411 BC, because as we begin the year 1410 BC, the Israelis are now preparing for the first year of Sabbath in the Promised Land. That will start in the fall of 1410 BC. Remember how the Israeli cycle of years is set up. 6 years of work where they work the land, plant the crops, trim the trees, harvest the crops, harvest the fruit of the trees, harvest the fruit of the vine, harvest the wool off the animals, everything like that. So 6 years they do it that way. And then when the seventh year rolls around, they take the year off. So they don't plant in the fall like they normally would. And they don't try to work with the trees through the winter months like they would typically do. And then when the next spring comes around, they don't harvest the grain. They don't harvest the summer fruits. They don't take the wool off of the sheep. None of that stuff happens in the sabbatical year. So it would appear that the Israelis spent their first 6 years taking control from the Canaanite fortified cities. And then they began to start doling out the assignments of where the different tribes are going to live during 1410 BC. All right, I want to pick up, as I said, in Joshua chapter 11, verse 23. So Joshua took the whole land according to all that he who is had spoken to Moses. And Joshua gave it for an inheritance to Israel according to their tribal assignments, and the land had rest from war. So this is where we're kind of feeling the beginning of the sabbatical year of rest coming on. They didn't have to go out to fight in the spring of 1410 because all of the battles with the fortified cities is finished. That's all been done. The Canaanites are in full retreat, those that survived by running away from these battles over the last 6 years. Chapter 12 then gives this information. Now, these are the kings of the land whom the people of Israel defeated and took possession of their land beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise, from the valley of Arnon to Mount Hermon, and with all the Arabah eastward. So the first thing that the summary gives is all of the territory that the Israelis took in the 40th year of the Exodus, when they had been attacked by Amorites living on the eastern side of the Promised Land. And this is how they ended up with the annexed territory. And so this is a summary of that. Verse 2, Sihon, king of the Amorites, who lived at Heshbon and ruled from Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon, and from the middle of the valley as far as the river Yabuk, the boundary of the Amorites, that is, half of Gilead, and the Arabah to the Sea of Kinneroth eastward, and in the direction of Beth Jeshimoth to the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, southward to the foot of the slopes of Pisgah. And Og, king of Bashan, one of the remnant of the Rephaim, remember, the Rephaim are a type of giant, who lived at Ashtaroth and at Adri, and ruled over Mount Hermon and Salika and all Bashan to the boundary of the Geshurites and Maacathites, and over half of Gilead to the boundary of the Sihon, king of Heshbon. Moses, the servant of He Who Is, and the people of Israel defeated them. And Moses, the servant of He Who Is, gave their land for a possession to the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh. So effectively, looking at a map, we see that from just around the northern end of the Dead Sea, or the Salt Sea, it's referred to here, to the east of the northern end of the Dead Sea, from there northward to the slopes of Mount Hermon, all of that territory has now been annexed into the land of Israel and given to Reuben, Gad, and half of the tribe of Manasseh as their territory. And they've already moved into it with the condition that they had to send a fighting force with Joshua across the Jordan to help the other 9.5 tribes get their lands. Verse number 7. Still more of the summary. And these are the kings of the land whom Joshua and the people of Israel defeated on the west side of the Jordan, from Baal Gad in the valley of Lebanon, that's up at the foot of Mount Hermon, to Mount Halak that rises towards Seir, that's down by Kadesh Barnea somewhere. So effectively, the writer, the prophet that's writing this down, says, not only did Moses and the Israelis gain control of the eastern side of the Jordan Valley, all the way up to Mount Hermon, but Joshua and the Israelis gained control of everything from Mount Halak down by Kadesh Barnea, all the way on the western side of the Jordan Valley up to the foot of Mount Hermon. Joshua gave their land to the tribes of Israel as a possession according to their allotments. This is about to happen. This summary is kind of jumping ahead of the story a little bit. In the hill country, in the lowlands, in the Arabah, in the slopes, in the wilderness, in the Negeb, the land of the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. So this is a summary of all the different types of land that was involved in this. And then we have this long list that I'm going to kind of abbreviate it after we see the pattern established. It says in verse 9, the king of Jericho, one. The king of Ai, which is beside Bethel, one. And so what we see is the establishment of a pattern of all the fortified cities that Joshua took control of and executed their kings. And it goes through the list kind of in chronological order of how it happened. And so we continue with Jerusalem, and then Hebron, and Yarmuth, and Lachish, and Eglon, and Gezer, and Debir, and Gedor, and Hormah, and Arad, and Libna, and Adullam, and Makkedah. Those are all to the south of Jerusalem. That was all part of that southern alliance that tried to take on the Gibeonites, who were allies of Israel, and they lost not only in that battle, but they lost the entire southern Canaan area to Israel. And then we kind of pick up north of Jerusalem with all the different cities, the fortified cities that the Israelis took. The king of Bethel, one, that's in verse 16, the end of it. And then Tapua and Hefer, those are all in the hill country just north of Shechem. Aphek, Lasharon, Madon, Hatzor, Shimron Meron, Aksaph, Taanach, Megiddo, Kedesh, Jokneam in Carmel, Dor of Nadoth Dor, Goyim in Galilee, Tirzah. So all of these are northern Canaanite fortified cities that Joshua defeated in open battle, in the waters of Merom battle, and then came back and took them one city at a time and burned Hatzor, but executed any Canaanites still remaining in the rest and took control of the cities. 31 kings in that list. So 31 fortified cities taken out in about 6 years' time. Chapter 13. Now, Joshua was old and advanced in years. And let's get this in perspective. When this is written about Joshua, he was somewhere in his 80s, just like his spy companion Caleb. We know that because Caleb will be talking about his age coming up here in a little bit. He is, both of them are, the only ones of the original Exodus generation that are still alive. The oldest people underneath them are like 20 years younger than them. And that bunch is the leaders of the new generation that were only teenagers whenever they came out of Egypt. So this is the reason why Joshua is described as being old and advanced in years. He's at least two decades older than the oldest Israelis of this time. So he who is said to him, "You are old and advanced in years, and there remains yet very much land to possess." So he's being told, you've still got other areas that you have not tackled yet. And then we have the list of that. Verse 2. This is the land that yet remains. All the regions of the Philistines and all those of the Geshurites. Now the Philistines were on the coast of southern Canaan. And the Geshurites lived in a watershed that came up out of the plains along the Mediterranean. We have kind of another bracketing description here. From the Shihor, which is east of Egypt. Now today, this is known as the Wadi El Arish. It's a watershed that dumps any type of rain out of the northern Sinai into the southeastern Mediterranean at a place called Arish, A-R-I-S-H. The Wadi El Arish is also known as the Brook of Egypt because it is the boundary between Canaan and Egypt. It is the boundary, the southern boundary, at least part of the southern boundary of the Promised Land. So from that southern boundary, which is east of Egypt, northward to the boundary of Ekron, which is one of the cities of the Philistines, Ashdod is the parallel city on the coast with Ekron. It is counted as Canaanite. There are five rulers of the Philistines, those of Gaza, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gath, and Ekron. So all of the coastline on the south west side of the Promised Land. Joshua hasn't dealt with any of those peoples. He continues, and those of the Avim in the south, this is people living down to the south of the Philistines, we'd call it the deep desert of the Negev. all the land of the Canaanites and Merah that belongs to the Sidonians, that's to the north. There's a little bump on the coastline of Israel. This is the Mount Carmel range that sticks out into the Med. And there's a little indentation on the coastline to the north of that. That is a bay that kind of marks the beginning of the most northern part of Galilee, of Canaan on the coastline, just south of Tyre and Sidon. And so they didn't touch any of that area in these wars that they just finished. It says here, Aphek is in that same area, to the boundary of the Amorites, and then the land of the Gebelites and all Lebanon toward the sunrise from Baal Gad, below Mount Hermon to Lebo Hamat. So that's up to the north of the military operation region of this most recent fight that we saw. It's on the borderland between Canaan and the Sidonians off to the northwest and the people of Tyre off to the west, and then all the places to the north in what is called southern Aram. So the fringe areas Joshua did not deal with because there were no allied fortified cities attacking him from that area. So that's left. Verse 6, all the inhabitants of the hill country from Lebanon to Mishrephoth Maim, even all the Sidonians, I myself will drive them out from before the people of Israel. So God tells Joshua, I plan on getting to those people eventually with you, with the Israelis, but not just yet. This kind of parallels something that God had said earlier. I will not empty the land of the Canaanites lest it becomes wild. We will move them out bit by bit so that you can occupy the land. So that was the intention God had for the Israelis. So they have the core, which is made up of effectively the hill country of Judah down around Hebron and Jerusalem, and then north from there into the area around Bethel and then up by Shechem. They've got control of that, and then they've got the control of Galilee, both Lower Galilee and Upper Galilee. So they've got the core of the Promised Land that they've emptied of the military forces in the fortified cities. The rest of the Promised Land is going to be occupied as they radiate outward from that core. That's the plan. But they are still going to be allotted the territory to each of the tribes so that they know what they're responsible for. So the last part of verse 6 says, and this is God speaking to Joshua, only allot the land to Israel for an inheritance as I've commanded you. Now therefore divide this land for an inheritance to the 9 tribes and half the tribe of Manasseh. So we're now going to start seeing the tribal lands within the core being assigned. So the areas where the fortified cities were just destroyed or just defeated, that territory is now going to start being assigned. Verse number 8, with the other half of the tribe of Manasseh, the Reubenites and the Gadites received their inheritance, which Moses gave them beyond the Jordan eastward, as Moses, the servant of He Who Is, gave them from the Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon, and the city that's in the middle of the valley, and all the tableland of Medeba as far as Dibon. So now we're seeing the description again of the annexed territory that has already been given as an inheritance. And we've gone over this quite a few times. So you know what I'm going to do? We're going to fast forward through it. You can read it on your own. There's an awful lot of proper nouns in here that are hard to read, hard to pin down sometimes into exactly where they're located. But basically, what is described all the way up to verse 32 is summarized in verse 32. These are the inheritances that Moses distributed in the plains of Moab beyond the Jordan east of Jericho. But to the tribe of Levi, Moses gave no inheritance. He who is God of Israel is their inheritance, just as he said to them. So Joshua doesn't have to worry about anything east of the Jordan. Moses already took care of that. The only thing he needs to be concerned with is all the territory he has control of now west of the Jordan. Chapter 14. These are the inheritances that the people of Israel received in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar, the priest, and Joshua, the son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers' houses of the tribes of the people of Israel gave them to inheritance. So they are now going to start handing out, by divine lot, the large territorial regions inside the controlled, conquered area that Joshua has already dealt with. Now, we know it's by divine lot because the high priest is involved with it, and it says so in verse 2. Their inheritance was by lot, just as he who is had commanded by the hand of Moses for the 9 1/2 tribes. For Moses had given an inheritance to the 2 1/2 tribes beyond the Jordan, but to the Levites he gave no inheritance among them. For the people of Joseph were 2 tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. No portion was given to the Levites in the land, but only cities to dwell in with their pasture lands for their livestock and their substance. And the people of Israel did as he who is commanded Moses. They allotted the land. So effectively, there are going to be 12 allotments, large tribal allotments. And the reason it's 12, even though the 2 sons of Joshua tribes each get a full allotment, is because the Levite tribe that descended from Levi, they are going to be scattered throughout all the allotments because they are the tribe that are supposed to provide spiritual support and legal guidance to all the other tribes. So they don't get a large allotment, they get individual cities within the 12 allotments. All right. Again, a little warning here. We're going to finish up in a little bit with today's session, but tomorrow's session is going to be an awful lot of logistical information, and we're going to zoom through much of it and expect you to kind of read the details on your own, because some of it's going to sound like reading through the index of a map. And a lot of times for us in our Western mindset, it's easier to find a map and actually look at the map itself in order to see the area we're talking about. And I'm going to recommend that to you between now and tomorrow. Go online or go to your library and find a book that has the 12 tribes of Israel distribution on a map. And that will help you greatly when we go through this area tomorrow. Okay, verse 6, though, introduces some details about Caleb. It says, then the people of Judah came to Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite said to him, you know what he who is said to Moses, the man of God in Kadesh Barnea concerning you and me. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of He Who Is, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in my heart. But my brothers went up with me, made the heart of the people melt, yet I wholly followed He Who Is, my God. And Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden shall be an inheritance for you and your children forever, because you have wholly followed he who is your God. Now behold, he who is has kept me alive, just as he said, these 45 years since the time that he who is spoke this word to Moses while Israel walked in the wilderness. And now behold, I am on this day 85 years old. See, that's how we know how old he is. I am still as strong today as I was in the day that Moses sent me. My strength now is as my strength was then, for war and for going and coming. So Caleb says, listen, Joshua, you and I were there. We were the two good spies. And we are the old guys in this. But I'm telling you, Joshua, I still feel young and fit and ready to take it on. I want the territory that God told me I could have through Moses. Verse 12, so now give me this hill country of which he who is spoke on that day, for you heard on that day how the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. It may be that he who is will be with me, and I shall drive them out just as he who is said. So he asks very specifically for Hebron, the territory that currently has Anakim in it, giants. And Joshua is fine with that. Verse 13, Joshua blessed him, and he gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. And therefore Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, to this day, because he wholly followed who he is, the God of Israel. And now the name of Hebron formerly was Kiriath Arba. Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim, and the land had rest from war. So Judah tribe is going to be given an allotment to the south, and Caleb specifically asks for the territory around Hebron. And we will read about how Caleb took on these giants later in the book of Judges. But we're out of time for today, so have a great rest of the day, and I'll see you tomorrow.